the Dirt Life Show with your host, George Hamill.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 156 of the Dirt Life Show. Stoked to have you guys join us tonight. We got an awesome show for you guys. We had Supercross this weekend, and man, it's just awesome to be back in Arizona. The weather's good here. So let me introduce you to our first guest. I'm Georgie Hamill, the host of Dirt Life Show. We are in Phoenix, Arizona, like I just said, at Austin Jones' shop. Austin Jones is grew up watching his father race off-road and is now an American off-road racing driver and champion. He won the Dakar Rally in 2022 and the SSV T4 category, and now T3 champ in 2023. He also won the 2021 FIA World Cup for cross-country rallies and is a two-time Baja 1000 winner for Score International as well in the trophy truck spec class. Welcome, Austin.
Thank you, sir. It sounds nice when you say it like that.
Good intro, though. But and you've only been racing for a short time. And to your left, we have co-host extraordinaire and co-driver extraordinaire, Joe Whining. What's up, Joe?
Same old, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's Joe's, I think he's been one of the most frequent guests on the show, dude. He's just stepping it up in his media game.
Always.
Big like media like guy it. Right here. But it's cool to be here, man, like be back in our Arizona roots. That's one of the things that I wanted to kind of base the show on is like I titled it in social media From Arizona to Dakar, which is in my mind is just freaking extraordinary. Like from being a kid growing up in Arizona and now having championships in the Dakar Rally, which is considered one of the top racing organizations or events in the world, that's got to feel good for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so crazy, you know, like how little it is over here. And then you go out to Saudi Arabia and you see a race like Dakar and, you know, coming home, everybody's all stoked and stuff like that. So it's definitely nice.
It's really cool though. Like, Joe, when you think of being like an Arizona kid, like let's just call it all of us playing in the sandbox, right? Like as little kids, and the motivation level to be in just getting in an off-road car is cool. And then like all of a sudden you work your way up to being a youngster and then going to Dakar and like seeing all this stuff. Like how does it feel to you to see that Austin is successful in this?
It's incredible. And like you say, the passes that he's gone through to get there. And now he's on this worldwide level. You know, he's over in Dakar, Saudi Arabia, Argentina, you know, Spain, Morocco, all these places all over the world racing.
Dude, and it's just like stepbrothers say, prestige worldwide, dude.
Prestige exactly. worldwide.
But dude, that is true though. Like, we're all joking about it, but like, it's a phenomenal achievement for you to be able to achieve that. So, and you're really humble. You've always been a humble winner and a kid, but it's got to feel good in like. Just to be able to know that you've done it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it takes a lot of work. You know, it's hard. Obviously, racing a Dakar, you got to think it's hard. But it really is. You know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort beforehand, during, and after. So, you know, to be able to put everything together for 2 years in a row now and get the win, it's, you know, it feels great.
Yeah, totally. All right, I'm going to fix some technical stuff. They said we got no sound on the iPad here, but I'll fix that real quick. Joe, can you ask Austin a couple questions like about growing up in Arizona and stuff like that? Because you did as well.
Yeah. No, we both, shoot, all three of us are growing up here in Arizona. But Austin, when you're over there in Saudi Arabia or Spain or wherever you're at racing, you take time to reflect and just kind of sit there and think about, man, I'm in Saudi Arabia right now.
Yeah.
Racing an off-road car. Do you take time to do that?
Definitely try to. I mean, when we're out there, it's so, you know, we're full blast the whole time. From
sure.
When I land off the plane, you know, we got to go admin checks, then go shake down the car, and then usually, you know, day one right after that,
yeah.
Media stuff here and there. So usually it's pretty full blast as soon as I get there. But, you know, every once in a while you got to sit back and you're like, dude, this is pretty cool that, you know, I'm this sure. far away from home out. And, you know, I've never gone anywhere other than Mexico and the United States up until 2018 when I raced my first rally. So like now we've been to all these places, raced in all these places. It's so crazy. So yeah, you definitely got to look back and kind of enjoy it every once in a while.
For sure. That's got to feel good.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And traveling is super cool. Being able to see, you know, the whole world and all these different countries and all these different cultures and just how different everything is. I think it's been a really good experience.
Yeah. So growing up here in Arizona, you were born here in Phoenix?
Yep, I was born over here in Litchfield Park.
Yeah. Nice, right here in the neighborhood.
Yep.
Nice. You went to high school here and
Yeah, my whole life. So I grew up over here, I literally live about 5 minutes. We're sitting 5 minutes away from the place where I went to Litchfield or to elementary school, middle school and high school.
Wow.
So I went off to college for a little bit over in San Diego, but then after that I moved straight back.
Any kind of school sports, high school sports or anything like that?
Yeah. It's funny because I wasn't even really like I was into racing. I always liked it and stuff, but I never did it. I played, you know, a lot of sports, baseball, football, lacrosse, soccer, the whole nine. I was super into all of that growing up. And to be a racer now, it definitely didn't see that coming.
Yeah, true.
Well, you were talking a little bit before. Hopefully you guys okay, good sound now. All right, thanks guys for letting us know. You were talking to me a little bit about it before the show. Like, you pretty much didn't even start like doing off-road stuff to what was it, 2015?
2018. First race. Yeah.
Dude, don't you think that's wild, Joe?
Yeah, no, that's pretty nuts.
It is kind of crazy to me to think that, cuz 5 years is not that much time. Does it feel like you were on a fast track, like just straight into it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that everything, how everything has worked out so far, you know, it's obviously worked out, but it's definitely been hard, just the pace of everything, you know, like jumping into a car for the very first time. Like the first time I ever wore a helmet and wore a driving suit was, you know, in Parker in 2018 when I was driving a spec truck. So like, yeah, the way that everything's kind of worked out, it's been pretty crazy. And, you know, there's been a lot of ups and downs, obviously. Lot of downs in the beginning, but and you know it's worked out,
so. Yeah, and that's because you are like on a fast track, right? But you have good people around you. Do you just like, when you want to be a champion, do you just sponge it all in and like listen to what everybody's saying, especially like, you know, when an expert like Joe tells you something?
For sure. I mean, I've spent some time with Joe in the right seat and me driving, and you know, I always take the approach of, you guys all know better than me. I'm down to listen. Everything that you guys say, I'm down to, you know, absorb it all and just try to apply it as well as I can. And because, you know, when it comes down to it, let's just be honest, you guys have a lot more experience than me. So I'm down to listen. If someone says I'm doing something right, someone says I'm doing something wrong, someone says I'm doing to do something differently, then, you know, I'm down. So I think that that's helped a lot, is having, you know, a lot of people around.
For sure.
Yeah, and I also think that that has a lot to do, like, shows a lot of your character, though, too. So you don't, like, oh, I already know what I'm doing. You, like, actually listen.
Now, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm still don't know what I'm doing half the time, man. We're just cruising. We have a little bit of a better understanding now. But at the same time, yeah, I still consider myself pretty new to all of this, which is weird because I've got so many miles now with all the rallies and stuff. But
well, I'll tell you that, like, considering that, like, that you think like that means that you have a lot longer of a career, because it means two things. It means you're not burnt out, and it means that you're still willing to learn more.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I still like want to go out with people that, you know, have a lot of experience, and I want to learn stuff and I want to learn different things and, you know, just pick up, you know, and be as, you know, as fast as I can. So
yeah, totally. So we got a few people joining in. Dakota Bedwell says, my boy AJ.
Hey, what's up, dude?
So if you guys want to share the show, please do. There's a little airplane icon down at the right hand of your screen if you're on Instagram, and you can obviously share it on Facebook and YouTube. You can catch us on Monday nights, sometimes on Thursday nights, hang out with us, talk with us, talk to your favorite drivers. The point of the Dirt Life Show is pretty much to give you guys a better understanding of the people that you see at the racetrack, right? Like, do we really know AJ when we see him at the racetrack, when we shake his hand? No, but we get the opportunity to talk to him now and have an in-depth conversation, and you guys can always join in as well, too. So, and thank you to all of our sponsors. We got KMC Wheels, one of your sponsors, too.
Yeah, big shout-out KMC.
Making some sweet products. We have some really cool projects that we're working on with those guys as well, so come check us out for that stuff on the Dirt Life Show channel. Thanks to the guys over at Max's Tires, guys at Motul. I think Motul helps you out with your guys' program too.
Yeah, Motul's a big sponsor for the rally program. So yeah, big shout out to Motul as well.
Shock Therapy, you can use the code DIRTLIFE at shocktherapist.com. You can get any of the products they offer, like limit straps, steering racks, BSD kits, all that good stuff. Thanks to guys over at JL Audio. They're putting a system in our Pro R that's going to it's probably going to blow my head off, honestly. It's good, though, so we'll have to see how that goes. Thanks to guys over at Evolution Power Sports, Todd and all the team over there. You can actually tune your Can-Am, your Polaris, whatever. You can just go buy one of their code shooters and tune your car from your phone, pair it up to your exhaust. Thanks to the guys over at Zollinger Racing Products. Use the code THEDIRTLIFE. Buy some tie rods, radius rods, all that stuff. Thanks to the guys over at Vision Canopies. They're doing some really cool stuff with the Factory Polaris team as well. So go check out some of the new canopies and things like that. You can help rebrand or market your off-road team, get your sponsors a little bit more love. And thanks to the guys over at Cryo Heat as well. So Joe, you talked a little bit about Austin growing up in Arizona. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was growing up in Arizona is a lot of heat. There's a lot of temperature changes in the wintertime. There's a lot of dirt. There's a lot of dust, but there's a lot of freedom, right? Because you can go ride a side by side. You can get out in the desert. You can do all of these crazy things. And honestly, Joe, I feel like that's kind of what prepared Austin to be the champion that he is these days.
Oh, for sure. The extreme heat. And just here over the last couple of months, man, it's been raining one day and freezing one night. And next day it's 95 degrees out. It's crazy.
Yeah,
but
you can take advantage of all that stuff, right? And go drive a side-by-side and do these things.
Yeah, I mean, we have so much, you know, we have so many trails out here and so much desert out here that, like, there's tons of places to go out and train. I do a lot of training out here in Arizona in between races and stuff. So, you know, it's super dialed for that. And, yeah, the weather, it's hot sometimes, but I don't know. If you can just deal with it for a little bit while you're out there, it's not so bad.
Yeah, totally.
Get used to it.
And do you do anything like what we were saying before? I think before the show we were talking about like being physically fit, right? So actually, let's talk about two things. When you get out there to like a place like Dakar or some of these rallies, has living in Arizona given you an advantage compared to some of those racers because you're used to different terrains like that?
I think so. Like, that's what I was telling you earlier is like the first time I landed in Saudi and like we went out for stage number one, we were cruising around the desert, you know, on the stage. And I'm like, this is pretty similar to home, you know, like the desert, it seems pretty similar. So I feel like just being out here so much and living out here has kind of prepared me to go race out there because the conditions are pretty much the same.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy when you think about it, right, Joe?
Yeah, and it's pretty neat. But like he said, he's more accustomed to the heat. More accustomed to the desert conditions and the dust and the sand and all just kind of like you said, almost at home.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the reason that I wanted to bring it up was because like in California, I don't get the opportunity to do that as much as you guys anymore. Right. Like being from Arizona, like I feel like I was spoiled until I realized I didn't have it anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I feel like being in Arizona gives you a pretty good advantage for that. But you're in pretty good shape, but do you want to do more? Like how do you plan to progress in your off-road career, like as far as physical goes, diet, all these different things?
Yeah, so a lot goes into that, you know. You want to kind of base your training physically and mentally and that kind of stuff around your races. So you want to basically train for a couple weeks, you know, a couple months beforehand, and then you want to basically be at your peak when you get to the rally, so you can perform the best, obviously, and be in the best shape you possibly can. So I think that, you know, just kind of keep doing that, training as much as I possibly can. Nutrition's a huge thing. You got to learn how to, you know, like take care of your body and stuff like that because you feel so much better in the car when you're in shape. Makes a big difference.
Is it just little things or like what have you been learning over the past years to try to make yourself better? I want these to be like kind of advice to the audience.
For sure. well, I mean, you have to like, first off, I drink probably more water than anybody on the human, like
on the planet.
So like, you know, drinking water like crazy, that helps. Like little snacks throughout the day when you're sitting in the race car, you have to like stay eating basically the entire time. And that helps a ton too, because then your brain starts getting all foggy if you don't eat for too long and stuff. So like you got to pick the right snacks. Like me and Gustavo, my navigator, we're like constantly eating like either protein bars or honestly, I've been super into like peanuts lately, like in the car.
That's like a nice clean form of protein.
Yeah. Right. So we'll cache like a couple packs of peanuts in the car and some beef jerky or something like that. Yep. But, you know, just like knowing when to eat it, what to eat and, you know, working around that kind of schedule.
So when I was doing some physical stuff, like I did an Ironman and some long distance bicycle races and stuff. And the one thing that they told us, and Joe, you know this, you drink before you're thirsty and you eat before you're hungry, because if you're hungry, it's already too late. If you're thirsty, it's already too late. So that's probably what you're doing is keeping that on a certain level.
Yeah, for sure. And then like, that's the same thing. Like, you know, hydrating wise, we get out of the race car, we do a however long of a day, 500 mile day or something like that. And then immediately you want to start drinking as much water as possible for the next day.
Yep.
You know, cause you already smoked that day. So like you try to load up for the next day. you pee a lot. But, yep. I mean, at the same time, you feel a lot better.
Yeah, totally. But you're flushing your system. Like, that's the proper way to do it, right?
Exactly, yeah. So that's a huge part that goes into it, especially with, like, stage racing over 14 days in rally. That's huge, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty massive. Like, and you've seen it a lot with the drivers that you've been with, Joe. You've done all kinds of different co-driving for Ethan Ebert now. You've done co-driving with Toby Price. You've obviously worked with Geyser Brothers. And you actually sat in the passenger seat with Austin's father as well. So you understand, well, not just to how to keep yourself going well, but to also keep the driver alive too.
Yeah, correct. Being a navigator, when you can tell when the driver starts to get fatigued, they start making mistakes and start getting sloppy in their turns and sloppy in their brake zones, and it's pretty crazy. So it's super important, and at the same time, you've got to stay on it too, because you've got to be with them working as a team, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and we talk about this a lot, like how much logistically the co-driver is important, but the co-driver is responsible for a lot more even, right? Because you have to think about that and be intuitive and, well, basically in with the person's mind the whole time.
Yeah, no, it's the more I do it, the more important it seems to get, is keeping the driver focused on the end result, not just the next 10 miles, but the end result, you know what I mean? And keeping them...
Yeah, not to get, like, too far sidetracked, because I still want to talk a lot about the stuff that you're doing now, Austin. But, like, we did a show with Fluid Logic. I think you've seen their systems, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And those things are really cool, because they give you exactly the stuff that your body needs. You know, you can get a breakdown of what your body needs as far as endurance and all of these different things. But I really feel like that's important, because that could make it be a winning racer. Like, that could make it... between like so let's just say the last 100 miles of a race or the last 50 miles of a stage, you could be fresher than the person next to you or the person that's battling with you, and you could win because you're actually keeping your fatigue level you're not fatigued.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, you're still in it. Your mind is still in it, because that's what happens first, is like when you get super weeded like that, then you start knocking off tires, you start running off the side of the road. I mean, It just gets worse. The worse you are, the worse, obviously, you're going to drive. So it's a huge part of it that, like, I think a lot of people kind of take for granted. But, you know, in the rally stuff, we got to stay on top of that.
It's really, yeah, and let's talk about that too, like, before we get into like some of the real hardcore racing stuff, is that when you're doing how many days is a Dakar, 14 or something?
14.
Yeah. Okay, so when you're doing 14, you're not necessarily always thinking about the task immediately in front of you. You're thinking about like milestones and then the end goal as well. Like, that's a pretty hefty weight.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, we have 14 days of racing, and it's... like, the amount of strategy and the amount of thought process and stuff like that that goes into it, other than actually racing, is huge. I mean, some days you want to finish in this position, you don't want to win. And then some days we look at the starting list and we see who's in front of us, and we want, you know, maybe this person go 1, 2, 3, and then we want to get fourth. So then we start behind these people and then try to pass these two people and get second this day. So, like, the amount of stuff that goes into a rally like that, I mean, it's, you're playing games the entire time.
Dude, that's crazy to think, Joe, like how much goes into that, because it really ends up being like a chess game, right? Yeah. And so the brain fade, you can't have that.
No, honestly, and his co-driver, Gustavo, he's got to be a machine in order, because they're off of rally notes, and they're off of, you know, cap headings and all kinds of different things. They're not reading just a GPS like we are over here in Baja. You know what I mean?
He's computing numbers at the same time to see where what positions and all. Dude, it's like a calculator at the same time.
Constant.
There's a lot going on over there. Yeah.
How does that work in the car then? Like, is there a lot in your head going on, or are you a little bit more focused on the task at hand?
I mean, it's, you know, it's 50-50. Like, I need that information, and I want him to tell me that information as we're going, and I keep it in the back of my head. But at the same time, if I start thinking about anything too much, then, you know, I'm going to drive off the side of the road or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, I need to know the information, and like, we need to stick to the plan and not get too excited and like go try to rip the doors off and win the stage. Because half the time, you don't want to win the stage. You know, that was like our plan this year at Dakar, was to win probably a stage, which we did, and then for the rest of the time, just, you know, like, stick to our plan and stick to our strategy, and it worked out pretty well. I mean, I guess, but yeah, it's tough.
Does that, okay, so the strategy really plays a big part in it. Does that mean that you also have to take into consideration what the next stage is? Like if it's a dune stage or if it's a rock stage or whatever, or like an open stage.
Right. Yeah, that obviously, you know, it takes a huge consideration on what we're doing the day of, because like we know that if we're going into the dunes the next day, it's so much easier to follow people in the dunes. That's just the way it is. If you're opening in the dunes, you're going to be slower than the people behind you following you, because you don't have to check. You know what right. I mean? If you see a car going over and you can't see it anymore, then obviously there's a huge drop there. So like you right. already know that coming up. So like on a day where I know that the dunes are coming up next, you know, you want to get like fourth, because then you can gradually start to pass people. You can't lose too much time, because then, you know, you're losing time on the lead and stuff like that.
Dude, that's wild for me to think, Joe. Like, could you be sitting in the passenger seat going like, all right, we can budget 4 minutes, but not 6 minutes? Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to ask him, is how mentally difficult is that, knowing that you don't want to win that stage?
Well, isn't Gustavo in control? Like, he's the one that's budgeting those minutes? Like,
yeah, so like he's budgeting the minutes and he's telling me, but at the end of the day, I mean, it's on whether I put my right foot down harder or
yeah.
not. You know? So like it's definitely like I get excited sometimes and I'm like, all right, dude, we got to go. Like we got to go. And yeah. he's like, dude, stick to the plan. And I'm like, big picture thinking, like, you know, we don't go to rallies to win stages. We go to rallies to win trophies.
He's sitting over there. He's like, calm down, kid.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you got to stick with your plan and like stick with what you know and is going to work out. So.
Dude, that's wild. Tough. Is it different than when you did have the success down in Baja? Is it like a massive difference?
Oh, for sure. Because, I mean, in Baja, that's one day, you know, you got to throw everything at it that you possibly can. Sure, in Baja, like you want to, you know, take it easy some places where you know that you could completely destroy the car and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's a sprint, you know, you got to go. So like that mindset's what I started out with. And then when I first started racing rally, I would blow myself up on the first or second day basically every single time. So, it's different. It's a completely different mindset. Now it's weird if I go back down to Baja or race a race in the United States. It's a trip trying to go back to that mindset of like, all right, we're gunning now, you know?
That is kind of crazy to think about. Like, I don't even know. Like, being a co-driver, Joe, would you be able to, like, shift gears like that? Because I feel like budgeting time would be the hardest thing on the freaking planet.
It's tough. It's really tough. And I don't know if I'd be able to hold it. Like he said, you've got to hold back in the spots that you know you need to hold back on. You know what I mean? And fortunately, with the races here in the States and down in Baja, we can pre-run. So we know what we're coming up against. Gustavo and Austin, they have no idea. They're just looking at the roadmap. You know what I mean? And that's what they got to go off of.
Actually, that's a really good point to bring up, too, because coming up like dirt bike racing, right? Like we had all of the time in the world to run practice, to run our first motos and our second motos, right? And you're just doing laps and it turns into muscle memory at that point. There's a completely different skill set that a driver like Austin has than somebody like myself behind the wheel, because I would be a little bit more timid the first time I approach something. So there's a lot of credit that Austin is due, because he can just navigate and see that right off the bat without even hitting it once.
Right.
Yeah, that was one of the big differences, too, coming from racing Baja and stuff, is, like, he's going to tell me when something's coming up, I mean, for the most part and stuff like that, you know? Like, unless it's...
That's only from a book. That's not from experience hitting it.
No, well, I'm saying, like, with the GPS, like, he knows, you know, we already know in this however many miles, and I know from pre-running, at this mile, there's this huge hole, so, like, check out for it, you know?
Yeah, like a danger, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, like, in the rally stuff, unless it says it on that page of notes that he's reading, you know, if I just, like, drive blindly and wait for him to say something and there's something maybe not in the road book, or if it's further away or something like that, then, like, you know, we're going to hit it.
Yeah.
So, like, it really taught me to look out the window, you know, and really look ahead as far away basically as you possibly can, and then drive to that and then take his notes and try to apply it to what I'm already seeing.
Correct.
Like
that. Dude, that's wild. Yeah, and, like, UTV El Paso West Texas is saying the same thing. Like, that's crazy. But adjusting quick is what makes a difference between a good driver and a great driver. And that's what I'm saying. Like, to be honest, I don't know if I have the skill set to be able to adjust that quickly. Like, do you think you could in the driver's seat, Joe? Because that's gnarly. That's a massive skill set.
Yeah, like, see, when you're trying to adjust that quickly, just fatigue your mind. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, you're just, and then the weather changes, the road book is made 2 or 3 weeks prior to the event. And then you get a big storm that comes through 2 days before the race. And now you got big old rain ruts and shit in there.
Oh,
that,
and yeah, and the notes don't change, huh?
And everything. Yeah. No, the notes are all the same, but yeah, the course is like completely different. So
I'm, yeah. And that's I just got a text message saying the ability to read the terrain and how important that is. Like, honestly, I didn't even realize it. So you must be looking. So as he's telling you stuff, Gustavo's doing a great job, right? But like, I always talk about this, like, how do you drive in dust, or like, how far do you look ahead? Because most people are used to looking like right in front of their fender, right? Like, right. But you're probably looking much further ahead than most drivers would.
Oh, for sure. And that's what I was saying is like, I'm looking way down basically as far as I can see, and then coming back, looking at what's in front of me, and then, you know, trying to adjust and going back like that. So like, yeah, we, as many notes as he has and stuff like that, sometimes there's mistakes in road books, or like you said, sometimes the road books change, you know, wind or rain or something crazy comes through, and like, this could be completely different than like how it was when they made that book. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not looking, you know, all the way out, and I'm just waiting on him to say something, waiting, we're going to hit it. It's going to be too late. So like, I'm adjusting, driving as far out as I can see, and then kind of skating back, dealing with this, and then going back again.
So yeah, that's crazy. So like, yeah, I was just going to say that, like, the way I'm seeing it in your head while like, while you're driving is, it, let's just say you're going through a section of dunes, and there's 10 dunes. You go to like the seventh one is where you can see, and then you see the 5, 6 and all the ones back all the way to 2, and then you're like, okay, I got to like crest this one, and then you just mentally noted the 6th one, and you're going to figure out how to get there as fast as you can. Dude, that is so much to process. That's insane.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole time, if you think about it, Gustavo's reading his notes.
He's not listening.
He's not looking out the window also. So it's just AJ looking out the window. Pretty much, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the other thing is like he's got his head down, he's reading, you know. So like, I'm the only one that's looking in front of us. Like if I don't see something that's, you know, and also at the same time we're driving, I'm generally driving as fast as the car will possibly go, you know, for the most part. It's like things happen quick,
dude. So, that's wild. Let's break that down. Not to be in the dunes, then let's just say that, because I saw some actually really good pictures that your team, Red Bull Factory Can-Am Racing, took of you guys this year. I got to look through one of your guys' drop boxes and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was some really, really cool areas where it almost looked like you guys were going through canyons with cliff rocks on the side.
Yep.
Like, how do you guys do there? Because, well, I guess you're not going at speed. You're probably a little slower pace. But do you get to take a breath at that time and like start like calming your brain down?
A little bit. Like if there's 2-track and you know, you can basically see around the corner and you see what it's going to be like, then you can kind of chill and like deal with what's in front of you and try to, you know, go through it as fast as possible.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I'm constantly scanning everything and reading the terrain like as much as possible. Just like, you know, every single little thing. If we're up against a mountain over here and we're going cross grain like that, I know that there was rain at one point, so there's going to be cross grain and there's going to be a G out or something like that. So you have to look at all your surroundings and everything and kind of, you know, play it off that and adjust your driving style.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I'm just thinking, like, in my head, I'm thinking, like, when the heck does your brain get to breathe? Because, like, when we were doing supercross racing, the only time you get to breathe is when you're on a triple. Like, that's it. Like, yeah. You just let off or on the finish line where you just, like, have a second and a half to take a breath.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, like, when do you get to mentally give your brain a rest?
When
you're on the liaison?
Yeah, when we're on the liaison back. And then not really even when we're on the liaison back, because I'm driving on the highway in a Can-Am and there's local traffic and we're getting smoked by everybody and I'm trying to dodge cars and stuff.
Dodging camels?
Yeah, exactly. And then a camel farmer will walk out with 15 camels on the way. And yeah, so literally until we get back.
David Van Lung, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, says good day from Pigeon Forge. He's not in Australia at the moment, though. Man, that's crazy. Like, just to think of the racing prowess that's in your brain in such a short period of time since 2018 is pretty phenomenal when I think about it. Because, Joe, this is conversations that, like, you would have with, like, a Rob McCracken or somebody that can actually process that stuff because they've been doing it their whole life, right? And Austin hasn't.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool to see that he has those skill sets already.
Yeah, within this short amount of time that he's been doing it, it's insane, you know what I mean? And fortunately, his father's a legend in off-road, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
He's got a lot of insight and a lot of knowledge, and of course, he's shared that with Austin, and so what's cool is Austin's be able to soak it in,
Yep.
And that's what's escalated Austin so far.
Well, so that's kind of one of the questions that I was going to talk about is like your love for off-road now. So like, did you always love it? I mean, I knew your dad did it when he was growing up, but.
Like I liked it and I thought it was cool and I really thought it was cool that my dad did it. And I used to like to look at the videos and the pictures and stuff like that. But like, I was never too into it. Like I was into it. I liked it a lot. I was never against it. I was just so busy doing other things, playing other sports and, you know, just doing other things that like a kid would do, that I never even tried it out.
Well, what were you into as a kid?
Well, I played a lot of sports. I was telling him earlier, I played, you know, like baseball, football, lacrosse, all that kind of stuff. So I was super into that. Basically like all, you know, growing up and stuff like that in high school and stuff. So I was super into that. And then when I finished college, I moved back to Arizona and I started working on my dad's pre-runners, you know, as a job. And that's where I really figured it out. I'm like, oh, this is really sick. This is really sick. Then I went down to Mexico a few times and got to just go ride around in the pre-runner with him and stuff. And I'm like, this is really rad. So that's
it kind of just started growing on you at that point.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. What was your favorite, like, just random, like, do you like stick and ball sports? Are you a skateboard guy? Like, what was your favorite?
I tried to be a skateboard guy for a while, but I was never good at all.
Oh.
yeah, so, and then, you know, I was into BMX bikes for a long time. I was not great at that either, but I was super good at lacrosse. Like, I played lacrosse in college and stuff like that, so I was into that.
That right there is hand-eye coordination to the fullest. So that would be where you get some of that visual perspective. We've actually talked about it on the show a few times, like the difference between an Eli Tomac or a regular weekend dirt bike rider is the way that they can visually, they have these visual receptors and how they can process information at millisecond level compared to another person, right? And like, there's a really, really good qualification in what you're talking about and how you perceive the data that's coming in when you're looking through the windshield.
Right.
Compared to somebody else. Like, that's what sets people apart. And a lot of people don't even know that they have that skill set.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting to think about for sure.
Yeah, it's wild. And like, to go even beyond that, and we're talking about the physical stuff, do you get the opportunity with any of your current partners to be able to expand those physical things and do that kind of stuff?
Some stuff. I mean, I don't know. Like, we do things here and there and stuff like that, kind of like other than racing some one-off events and stuff. But not really so much anymore.
Well, I mean, more like to the effect of, like, let's just say you're a professional dirt bike racer. Like, Jeremy Martin is known for having these crazy VO2 levels, and he can do all of this. Like, they put you on a bicycle or they put you on a running machine, and you do all these tests, right? Does Red Bull offer that to you guys, or how can you expand your physical capabilities through some of those partners?
Oh, for sure. I mean, over in Santa Monica, Red Bull has the Athlete Performance Center for athletes. So they want me to come down. This year has been so crazy. I haven't had the chance to head down there yet. But soon, I've actually got an appointment coming up. Soon, I'm going to head down there. And yeah, they've got this crazy gym, full nutritionist kitchens and all that stuff. And they have all these trainers that basically take whatever sport that you do that, you know, you're signed to Red Bull for, and they make you like a plan and like how to best, you know, be your best athlete, essentially.
So they can reverse engineer the tasks that you're doing and like optimize you for those tasks?
Essentially. And like they take it as far as even doing like mental training and stuff like that.
Dude, Joe, that's scary. That's like building robots, man.
No kidding.
Yeah, we're just a bunch of racing robots, dude.
Well, and like you said, the mental capacity is dude, it's there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on, reading all that terrain and reacting to the car's capability. There's a lot going on.
You know what? Sure. I would love to see, like, you're a perfect example of it, right? Because you're already good at what you do and you're already a Dakar champion. Like, to see, like, you, let's just say you go through the process and you start getting your body in different, you know, physical shape or whatever it is, and you take that and you use that to elevate you to the next level. And who knows where you'll be. I don't know if you'll be driving in Dakar or F1 for who knows. But, like, I'm just saying, like, to see the level of progress that you get when it's that like ingrained in your body would be insanely cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the huge, like, that's one of the big pluses about being sponsored by a company by like Red Bull is, you know, they take that mold and they take you the extra mile and they do basically everything that you wouldn't even think, like, consider doing and make you, like you said, like a robot, dude.
Dude, I've been noticing a lot. I don't know if you're like this, Joe, as like we get older in our years, we start being addicted to different things, right? Like maybe when you graduate college, you're addicted to success and you want a better job and all this stuff. Well, I've noticed now that I'm addicted to progress, and to hear the stuff that he's doing, That sounds like the best progress possible, especially for a racer guy.
Yeah, 100%. Physical, mental, it's...
That's so cool, the win-win. Man. Yeah, but, well, you're going to have to cut down the tacos and pizza, though, dude.
Yeah, I guess.
No more donuts for Austin.
Dude, I went big this weekend, too. I was feeling bad about it.
What did you do this weekend? Did you go watch some motocross?
Yeah, I cruised over for a little bit. I didn't stay very long. I just cruised over, watched a couple of the races, and then bailed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was sick.
Busy guy over here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, busy
guy. Well, that's cool, man. Like, I appreciate that you can utilize all the stuff that you grew up doing, right? And I'm sure there was so many things that you did as a child with your parents or with your dad and, you know, like even, you know, with Joe and like learning all of these different things because you're out there having a good time playing in the desert. And honestly, man, that's what our audience does. Like, we love being able to go out on the weekend. I don't know if you guys can see it very good on Instagram. You're going to have to keep your phone sideways. But, you know, these two vehicles that you have behind us, they're not even race cars, and you go out and have a good time in these things.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you earlier, is, like, it's crazy that, like, as many miles as I drive a year and, like, every, you know, basically every month in races and how it's my job, this is still what I want to go do on the weekends and stuff, is I want to go drive my Can-Am and I want to go out with my friends and stuff like that out to the desert and drive Can-Ams. So, like, I'm into it now. Like,
it's
cool. I'm big into it.
I know everybody that's watching this, and Joe, you do it too. Like, we're big enthusiast guys.
For sure. For sure. And that's what's helped him accelerate so much, is the love for the sport.
Because he cares.
Yeah, he cares, and he loves doing it, and that just progresses into what he does for...
Actually, this is a good question just for my personal benefit. So I'm building a new Pro R right now, and it's actually here in Phoenix, so it's going to stop. Where should I take it if I'm going to start driving it around here?
Oh, man, it kind of depends on what kind of terrain you want to cruise. I mean, if you're going for the dunes, then I would say go out to Yuma. You know, Yuma's got all those dunes.
I kind of want to just go, like, if I'm going on a trail ride, I'm just going to go on a leisure ride. We might stop and have lunch somewhere. Like, can you set me up somewhere around here that's close to the Phoenix area?
Around here? Like, just the other day, I went out and I did a bunch of miles with Can-Am and some people. Over in Cave Creek. So, like, right outside of Scottsdale in Cave Creek, Arizona, dude, there was some of the sickest trails in these canyons, and you go right up.
Oh, they have the red rock and stuff up there, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and there's a river that flows through it, and there's all these roads and all these trails that go up to it. It was so rad.
Dude, I'd be big into that. Yeah. That would actually be super cool. All right, Joe, you're going to have to bring your side-by-side up here, and we're all going to have to hit it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That does sound like fun. Maybe that's what we should do is... see one weekend that Austin's off. Maybe he's off on a Saturday, and we'll do a dirt life ride out there. That'd be sick. All right. So, how much effort does it actually take to reach that professional level? Because you've done it. You're a Dakar champion now. You've obviously had success in Baja and stuff. But do you consider yourself at the professional level, or are you trying to get higher? Like, what's the end goal?
Well, I mean, I'm always trying to get higher for sure, trying to always push it as far as I can basically take it and be the best that I possibly can be. But, I mean, at this point, yeah, I do consider myself professional. You know, this is what I dedicate all my time, basically all my effort into, is you know, racing these cars. So I definitely consider myself professional, but it's not anywhere where I want to be. You know, like, you know, two Dakar wins is cool, but I would rather have 10. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of deal. So, like... It's cool where we're at, but and still, like I was telling you earlier, I still consider myself pretty new to this.
Yeah.
So, like, once I get as experienced as some of you guys, then maybe, you know, things will change a little bit. But like, for right now, I'm still hungry. So, like, I'm down to just do everything possible to be the best racer that I possibly can and get as many wins and, you know, do as good as possible.
That's spoken like a true champion, right, Joe?
For sure, for sure. Do you set near goals or goals way far out, or what do you kind of
on both? Yeah. Honestly, so I mean, like, the goal this year, every Dakar you want to win Dakar, obviously. That's kind of short term, but then every, like, long term, want to win the world championship. So that's, you know, a combination of all the world championship stops, all the rallies that we do is to win this world championship. Mm-hmm. So that's the goal right now. And then as far as, like, you know, the following years go and stuff like that, I don't really know. I've got goals and stuff like that, but for right now, I'm just trying to stay focused on what I'm doing and do the best.
Yeah, that's a good mindset to have. Just throw a shout out real quick to Michelle Huseman, Bryce Menzies, Brittany. Like, we got some cool people watching, kind of sharing the stories, right?
Yeah,
shout out to all those guys. But it is cool to understand that, man, because everybody has a different way of looking at things, right? And I think a lot of the benefit of us having the Dirt Life show is to help the younger generations, right? Like, we have a lot of kids that watch the show or listen to the show and get advice from drivers like you and athletes or ambassadors, whatever, because you're doing all of it, right? Like, you have to be a well-rounded person. And whenever I hear those things, like what Joe's saying, is asking you if you have milestones and stuff, I feel like those are some of the things that benefit people the most, is because the kids may or may not understand. They just want to go out and win, but they don't know how to do it. Is there a certain procedure that you go through that can help other people? Like, during the week, I have to focus on this task. Then on the weekend, I have to focus on this task. Or, like, how does it work out for you?
For sure. I mean, you have to be, honestly, at first, pretty regimented. I mean, you have to do all the things that you need to do that makes yourself a good racer off-road. And, you know, as far as that goes, I would say mentally is number one. Like, off-road racing and racing, I feel like, in general, is, for me, like, 75% mental. And then two, driving aspect.
Three. Well, can you talk about that mental one real quick? Like, do you mean you have to be mentally strong? Do you have to be resilient? Like, it's like happy, sad, or like it's an emotional roller coaster and you have to fix it? Like,
yeah, so like you have to be able to, you know, control your emotions and stay calm. I mean, that's the most important thing that I've learned so far, is like back when I first started, you know, I'd get a flat and then it would be just downhill from there, like sitting there screaming in my helmet, like it's over, it's over, it's over, it's over. And then there would be, you know, 300 miles left of that day. Like, so like if you, and then everything just goes downhill after that. So you got to be able to control your emotions, have a very short memory, like, okay, that happened, we're good, go. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So like, that's a big thing. And just, yeah, resiliency. Like, not everything is going to be perfect every day. Sure. And you're going to have problems. In a race like Dakar, 14 days through the terrain that we're going through, you're going to have a bad day. Something's going to happen that's not perfect. You
for
know?
Sure.
And so, even on the other end of it, like what you're talking about, like in the shop too, because a lot of these teams are just operating it out of their mom and dad's garage, right? Like, right. Just to be resilient in that aspect too. Like, if you break the car on the weekend and you have to fix it next week, don't get mad about having to fix it. Get pumped on fixing it better.
I was just going to say, that's so good for you. I mean, like, especially in the sport that we do, off-road racing and, like, rally racing, where you're the only person, like, you know, your co-dog too, but, you know, you got to get out and you got to work on the car. Like, if you knock off a radius arm or something like that, you guys, the quicker you can change it, the quicker that you're going to be back out on the track. So that's a huge opportunity and a huge part of racing that, like, you know, it separates a lot of people from being really good drivers and really, you know, really successful race results as opposed to not, is they, you know, they can't work on the car.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a huge part of it. So, like, yeah, I would say, like, don't get pissed that you ripped a corner off or something like that. You know, it's a bummer, but at the same time, it gives you an opportunity to learn how to do that and fix it as efficiently and as quickly as possible. And then once you have that procedure down, then you and your co-dog can be out there and you can swap an arm out that quick and be back on the
And it sounds like you're being accountable too, because you're like, okay, mental note, I'm not going to make that same mistake again.
Yeah, and then you learn. Obviously, you know, we learn from our mistakes. So, like, once you do that and, you know, you have to fix it and then get back on it, you get back, you lost 15, 20 minutes on the stage, you're like, all right, well, I'm not going to do that again.
Yeah, exactly. Correct. And Joe, you know this because you sat with so many good racers. Like, that's a massive talent to have. Dude, I can't say how rare that is, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's major, and like you say, it's not really a negative, because you're learning from it.
Right.
You're learning, like you said, you're learning from your mistakes. So there's no real reason. Yeah, of course, you're in the heat of the moment. You get upset. You get pissed off. But like you said, it happened. You can't change that.
Yeah.
It just happened. You just got to look forward and do the best you can with what's in front of you.
Yeah, you know what's funny too is, like, we used to always talk about this in dirt bike racing, is like the best thing about a dirt bike racer is they have the attention span and the memory of a gnat. Because you can't remember the last corner, otherwise you're not going to go through the next corner good, you know? Right. Like, so that's kind of cool that this is the same thing for you guys. And, like, I can see it being that much more valuable, especially in those rally races, because you really don't have any I don't know what you want to call it, muscle memory or understanding of what's in front of you.
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't know. It could get a lot better or it could get a lot worse. So, I mean, what are you going to do about it? You're going to freak out about it, or are you just going to go?
Yeah,
so,
exactly. I
mean, there's really not much of a choice.
Well, so 2018 has been only 5 years away, but we were talking with your dad earlier, and he was telling us, You've raced Dakar four times, I think?
I've done four, yeah.
Four Dakars. And you're a champion in two of them. How did the other ones go? How did your first one go and the second one go?
So my first Dakar, I ended up getting eighth. So, yeah, I got eighth my first Dakar, and that was the first year that it was out in Saudi Arabia. So that was in 2020.
Okay.
I got eighth. We had some problems with the car and stuff like that, but, I mean, for the most part, it was a clean run and just got outran. You know, those guys, they were so experienced, and they knew what they were doing. So then I did tons of training, like went absolutely insane, was out, and I had a different navigator than I do at the time, a dude named Kellen Walsh. You might know him.
Yeah.
And I went out to Nevada, and basically every time that Kellen could, that he was off work, we would go and do road books. There's a pretty small community of people that have road books here in the United States, but a lot of them are in Nevada. So, and obviously if you've ever been in Nevada, there's a lot of desert there.
Oh yeah.
So we would just go run road books for, you know, I'd take my truck out there with a trailer and my car, and we would stay for as many days as I possibly could till he had to go back to work, and we would just run at thousands of miles and just put in the time, try to get better. And then, and then my second Dakar, that was in 2021, and I got second. So that, you know, that's
that kinda was probably like, well, like, so let's actually talk about two things. When you get eighth, does that motivate you? Does that depress you? Like, where do you go with that?
Well, and that goes back to the mental thing, you know, is like it should bum you out. Like, it's a bummer, you know? And especially if you think that you could do better, like, in yourself, if you think that you could have done better, then yeah, you know, it should bum you out and it should motivate you. It's like, you don't want that to happen again. So
yeah. Cause a good racer wants to win.
For sure.
Exactly.
So like, you know, and you want to do as good as you possibly can. So like, I felt that wasn't the best that I could have possibly done. And right there, I was like, dude, there's never going to be another time that I'm behind, you know, or in a rally where we finish. And I'm like, shit, like I could have done more. Like, yeah. I could have tried harder. I could have done this, or I could have, you know, trained a little bit more, or done something different to get a different result, because I feel like I could do better.
I feel like that's massive for people to understand, is just to use that as motivation.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So then you go and you do use it as motivation. You get up to a second place spot, and that's almost winning, right? But like, does that like actually? You know what? What did you do better to get to that second spot?
I managed a lot better. I learned a lot about racing Dakar. I learned a lot about racing a race that was, you know, 14 stages, and kind of went about it a different way. The strategy really came into play that year, and just kind of came in with a different mindset, and that really helped a lot. And obviously, you know, all the miles and stuff like that, training, that helped my driving. That, you know, I was quicker for sure.
So honestly, Joe, there's a lot that's going on in this conversation that I think that we should understand. And you're probably getting you're hearing the same stuff that I am, is the physical and the preparation portion of it. To me, it sounds like is almost easier than training your brain and to train your visual perspective and all these different things that happen in your head.
Yeah, no, like say that he was just mentioning the year he finished second, totally changed his mindset as far as preparation, you know what I mean, and going into the race knowing how to manage the rally better. You know, and of course his physical stamina and the more seat time he acquired doing all the training helped, but the mental is more. So, in my opinion,
when you have the opportunity, so Joe, you've sat, like I said, in the right seat. Well, I mean, you've learned a lot too from Bryce Menzies and Orin Anderson and like all these guys. Since you're able to put yourself in a position with some of these guys too, how do you leverage that to make it the better for you? Are you able to ask them certain questions and kind of get a gauge on understanding how they do things and put that as part of your process?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, first off, I like to ride with everybody. Like, I like to ride. I like to see how people do different things.
Oh,
like,
you're talking about being a passenger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, a lot of drivers, they don't like to ride.
Mental note, all these kids are saying, no, all I want to do is drive. Ah. There's a very valuable lesson to be learned here. Being a co-driver.
For sure. And, you know, I like to, when we're out training or at shakedown and stuff like that, like, I let my navigator, Gustavo, like, you know, I've rode with him before, so like he can understand what I'm feeling and stuff like that. So when he tells me things, he has a better idea of what I've got in my hands. You know what I mean?
Dude, that's actually a pretty amazing tip right there for all of our listeners and the kids.
Yeah, no, what's really cool is he's able to take that riding with somebody and absorb it and change his driving style to compensate, you know, take a little bit from here and a little bit from there and just put it all together.
You know what that probably, yeah, that probably does too. So it probably puts you, I don't want to say this, like a lot of kids think they can drive. I thought I could drive, like those things. And it puts you, it gives you a different perspective. Like maybe you think you're good and then all of a sudden you drive with somebody who's badass. You're like, fuck, I suck.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, so I was a professional short course driver, right? And take that as the literal term. It was a professional series and we were doing professional racing. I got to drive with Rob McCachran in a sway bar disconnected Turbo S, right? Around a short course track. And I considered myself a complete beginner just after seeing how he saws at the wheel and uses his feet.
Yeah.
He was barely moving. The process that he had going on in his head and the way that he could think and further ahead than I could ever think in my brain just totally taught me and put me in my place saying, George, if you were ever going to get to that level, you needed many, many more years of experience.
Yeah.
So that could be like what people learn from what you're saying too, is just be a sponge and be willing to accept that you have plenty of growth.
100%. Yeah. Don't think that you're, you know, super badass because you're probably not. And there's people that are a lot better than you.
The guy at the campsite. Everybody's the Robbie Gordon of their campsite at the dunes.
Yeah, for sure. And it's crazy. I've had the opportunity to ride with lots of people.
Right.
You know, I'm Bryce Menzies, Larry Ragland, Jesse Jones, you know, John Herter, a bunch of guys that are fast. They're all fast, but they're fast in different ways.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like you say, you know, I'm riding with Bryce. We were tested one night for the Baja 1000 and just calm and collected,
yeah.
just nice and chill. But you look out the window and you're like, oh, shit, dude.
Yeah. Like we are
it,
cruising.
Dude. We are getting it. And you ride with somebody else and you're still getting it, but he's over there sawing at the wheel and he's,
yeah.
you know what I mean? It's just like,
yeah, it looks like they got an MMA like fight going on in the driver's seat.
Exactly. Right, it's two different styles. And if you can take that in and interpret it into your own driving style and make something out of it, dude, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. I love that you're able to just put yourself in a position where you're just willing to learn.
Yeah.
So whether
yeah.
it's sitting in the driver's seat or the passenger seat, you just want to keep like excelling and moving forward. So it kind of sounds like you are addicted to progress too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it could only help. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, it can't hurt you at all. No. Like, what are you going to do? You know? So like, it could
yeah,
only help. And if you want to be better, then that's what you want. You know, you want help. There's nothing wrong with that.
And you're probably even looking at some of the negative things. Like, not that anybody that you ride with has negative things, but let's just use the Bryce Menzies for an example. If he makes a mistake and you guys both see it, and then you learn from that too, like that's actually really positive as well.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, everything that you learn, like literally, like what you keep on saying, just be a sponge, you know, good, bad, otherwise, just learn everything you possibly can from as many people as you possibly can. And then kind of make your own style and form your own like craft at it. And dude, you're set.
That's cool, man. Well, let's kind of change the subject a little bit here. So we're sitting in your shop. I'll change the camera angle around a little bit so you guys can kind of see some of the stuff that's going on. We got a welding table, some welders back here. Obviously, you got the Can-Ams and stuff. We got some machines back there. You've been doing some pretty cool stuff. This is a good angle. It's frozen, but that's a good angle of some of the stuff in the back of the shop. You guys have some pretty cool stuff that you do during the day as well. Like you're starting to build parts and it's pretty neat to see that you're that vested in off-road.
Yeah, there's a lot going on over here every day. So like if we're not working on the cars right now, like prepping them for, you know, the next ride or the next media shoot or something like that, then yeah, we're doing some CNC work. So coming up soon here, not yet because we're still in testing, making prototypes and stuff like that. But coming up soon, we're going to start coming out with parts here, my own branded parts. So I think for Can-Ams, and I think that they're going to be really good because, you know, I've got a lot of experience, a lot of miles in these cars, and I kind of know the things that I would like different and the things that, you know, I would do differently if I was making parts. So we've got this CNC machine in here and, you know, we've got really good guys working for us and like kind of taking the things that I'm saying and drawing them out, making parts. So I think they're going to be rad.
Well, and like I say, and they should be because you have the experience of being out there in Saudi Arabia, changing this part that failed
yeah.
and knowing why it failed. And now you're interpreting it into a new drawing, into a new part.
Yeah. It's not always just putting a bigger Heim joint. It's sometimes locating yeah. the Heim joint to it, clocking it like a couple millimeters different or whatever it
yeah,
is.
Exactly.
Like,
so that's right. being an EHAS experience on the parts that he's building is phenomenal.
Yeah, and I've broken basically everything more than one time. You know what I mean?
Austin approved.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So like, you know, I've tore some stuff up before. So like, I've got a pretty good idea of where things need to be changed and how they could be better. And I think they're going to look sick on top of everything. So,
dude,
like,
who doesn't love, like, billet is just like, it's guy's jewelry, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, it looks so good. Really UTV El Paso West Texas asked if there's a website or something. I think you guys said maybe start an Instagram in the next, like, after you get a little bit more ready or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's coming soon. So, yeah, thank you, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, just make sure you're following Austin's page, and he'll probably post something about it. That kind of brings me up to like a totally different thing. On the way here, I was passing Ace Hardware, and I was like, dude, Southern California has no Ace Hardwares. I miss a good Ace Hardware, dude. I miss me a good Arizona Ace Hardware.
There's that one right there. And like, well, when we're working on something, like, it's usually like a joke, like, how many times are we going to hit Ace today?
Yeah.
Because like, I'll go up there, I'll buy a bunch of stuff, come back, and then, you know, 15 minutes later, I'll be like, oh, I forgot that, or I bought the wrong thing, and then cruise back.
I need more Loctite or 16 little tiny screws.
Yeah, exactly. Get the wrong ones or something great like that. So
it's funny because I guarantee every single one of us has the same problem. Man, you know what we were talking about before? Not to change the subject again, but some of the people that are watching might remember a place called Thrasherland Motocross Park that was right down the street. Like, Arizona bringing back so many memories this trip for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys remember that track?
I do. There was some good racing out there. Real sandy.
Yeah.
Fast. That was good times.
I remember it. I remember, like, driving past it on the Glendale right there.
Did you ever do any two-wheel stuff? Like, did you get out and ride or...?
Like, I've done some trail riding and stuff like that. I've never raced any type of dirt bikes or motocross or anything like that. But, you know, some trail riding here and there, just like, as, you know, normal people do, you know, going out and cruising.
Are you still a big, like, supercross, motocross fan? Or?
Yeah, like, I'm super into supercross. And, like, I like watching it on TV. You're asking me if I went the other day. Like, I went for a little bit, but then I'm like, dude, I could watch this at home.
The TV coverage is pretty good.
The coverage is really good. So I'm, like, sitting there and I'm like, all right. So, like, I watch it at home and stuff like that. You know, I'm super into it. But, yeah, I never did it growing up.
Yeah, so it doesn't have the same connection. Like, Joe and I are big supercross, motocross guys.
Yeah, right. No, and that's another thing. Riding dirt bikes our whole lives, going back to the mental, you know what I mean? You're looking way out. You're not looking right here in front of the fender. You're looking further out because... Yeah. You know, by the time you see it, you've got to be able to react to it.
Especially in the desert stuff. Like, I didn't have too much experience in the desert, but, like, I can totally see what you're saying. Like, I've talked to guys like Max Eddy and, you know, Baja Champions on motorcycles, and, you know, we got to hang out with Brabeck a little bit on Saturday. Like, the way that those guys perceive the terrain is completely different, and their physical ability to be able to move that quick as things approach is freaking wild.
Oh, yeah. Dude, yeah, the bike guys are a different breed. Like, at Dakar, dude, those guys are animals.
Have you seen how fast they go? Have you ever been near them or anything like that when they're out there?
The people that I pass when I'm out, because they start hours ahead of us, you know?
Okay.
So, like, the way that the bikes work at Dakar is, like, first sun. So, like, they literally time it off of the sunrise. So, like, first sun, as soon as it's, you know, bright outside, then they go.
Oh, really?
So, like, they'll do the liaison in the dark, and then, boom, they go right after that. So, like, the guys that I'm passing or the people that I'm passing, you know, starting a couple hours later, are people that aren't going too fast.
Yeah, or they had an issue or something.
Or had an issue, yeah. So, like,
but those big dudes have some cojones, dude, to be able to go that fast.
Bro, it's so gnarly. I mean, you see some of the videos of them, like, going through sections, and some of their get-offs that they have, dude, are so gnarly. And then they just pop up, and then they keep going, and then they proceed for 10 more days.
Built like Gumby.
I'm like, dude.
Yeah, we talked to Skylar House, and we talked to him the other day, and it was like, oh, my God, dude. Like, that guy is so gnarly. And he's just mellow. Like,
yeah, he's a chiller, yeah. And he acts like such a chiller, and then you go out and you see what he's doing every day and stuff like that, and some of the times he's throwing down, and you're like, dude, there's something wrong with you guys. Like, you guys are insane.
Because he goes that fast? So I kind of have two questions here, but, like, I want to end with the question, like, do you plan to do, like, the T1s, like the cars and stuff? But did you ever think that side-by-side racing was going to be this crazy?
No, I had no idea because, I mean, I started out, I didn't have very much experience in the side-by-sides, you know, even with the little experience I've had in general. Like, I started out in trucks. So, like, I started off with trophy truck specs. So I never really had any idea about how big this was, you know, and how competitive it was going to be and how the progression of it all. I mean, a Can-Am back then was what it is, and now a Can-Am now is what it is now. And it's the progression that they've had is absolutely insane. And the way that they work and everything that I do to those cars, dude, and they still keep going at, like, top performance through all those days, it's insane to me.
It's pretty crazy. And, Joe, you'll get along with this. Is like, so Toyota Hilux is the T1 class. Is that usually who does the best, right? And they got the different other cars, like what Sebastian Loeb drives. I don't know what it is.
The BRX car.
BRX. Yeah. Like, they're on a different level still. But to see the gaps kind of close up and to see that sometimes the side-by-sides can, like, cut through, like, little areas and stuff, like, Joe, that's pretty amazing.
Dude, it is. It is. And that's, you know, they're all-wheel drive. They're light. They're maneuverable. And, yeah, no, and like you said, the progression of the whole suspension and the steering and the brakes, and they're fast. I mean, they run good. They're 200 horsepower, you know what I mean? And it's pretty neat. And it just keeps going.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I figured it would have, there was a craze for a while and would have kind of settled down. It's not settling down.
Yeah, it keeps progressing.
It just keeps progressing. And when I just came back from Baja for the San Felipe 250.
Yep.
And the amount of UTVs that were there was insane.
Mind-blowing.
And super high-quality parts. Just, it's crazy.
Did you go down there, Austin?
No, I didn't make it down there this year. I wasn't racing, so you know what? I was in Texas for that.
Oh, yeah.
For the ranch scramble. I was thinking, why didn't I go down? Yeah, I was in Texas for that short course race in the Can-Am. That was wild.
How did you like that? Because I've been there, and I've helped out with that track and stuff like that. I actually liked the facility a lot.
That whole area was super sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, everything that they did there was sick. I've never tried short course before. I've never driven a car like that. I had never been that close to other people at the same time, that many other people at the same time. You know, like, completely different than anything I've ever done. And all I can say is I definitely want to try again. I want a little bit more practice before I try to go race those, you know, the big boys out there. But it was a lot of fun, and I think, you know, we did decent for my first time.
Well, so Joe knows a lot about short course, but, like, the adrenaline rush that you get going into, like, let's just say the first turn with the Miller brothers and, like, all those other Can-Am factory guys, dude, is pretty wild. Because, dude, you're, like, inches or hitting each other, like, just never shut down.
Yeah, no, there was a heat race where I was with this one dude in a Honda and then Mitch in the Polaris, and I won the whole shot, and they squeezed in on me, and we all three, boom, bounced off down the main straightaway. And I was like, I remember, like, I had a spotter in the radio, you know, and he's like, just hold your line, just hold your line, just hold your line. And I was like, oh, dude, boom, and we all just bounced, and it was so gnarly.
Dude, that's crazy. It's like way different of a racing style, right? Because I think, what would we used to call it? Like, it was like MMA on four wheels is what we used to call it, I think.
Yeah.
For, like, that Lucas Oil stuff. Man, I miss those days, though. That's cool that you got to experience it. Did you like it?
Oh, dude, I liked it a lot. I want to try it again. Like, if we had another one of those, especially out there, like, at that track in Texas, it was sick.
That track is pretty sweet, dude.
Yeah, it was
and
cool.
The way that they have it. What about, like, because it's a little bit more sender, because you got to go up to jump super fast, and then, like, sometimes you got to scrub or brake. Like, sometimes you got to hit the gas. Like, how do you like all that stuff?
Yeah, so, like, it was definitely, again, it was different. I'm like, dude, just send it off these jumps, like, as hard as you can every time. And then we started doing, like, more practice laps, and I'm like, oh, you know, if I scrub this one and don't just land on the flat every single time, then I might be able to gain some more speed into this corner.
Yep.
So, yeah, I was picking it up.
Quick learner over here, Joe.
Yeah.
Dude, have you seen any of the new side-by-side racing that they're doing? It's almost like motocross, like short course stuff.
I've seen some of that. Yeah, it's a lot of airtime.
It's cool, though.
Yeah,
it's super cool. What about, like, when you were going into some of those corners and they give you, I don't know if they call them moguls or whoops in side-by-side, but, like, you're going through the whoops and it starts to upset the car. Like, how did you, feel about that?
Oh, for me, I mean, that's fine for me. Like, I'm good with the whoops. Like, that's no problem for me. Like, that was the part where I actually knew what to do there. It's like, you know, we go through
so much.
Well,
because you got to kind of time it with your feet.
Yeah, you got to, like, kind of try to skip across the top.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, like, I mean, that was cool with me. But it's crazy because those cars are, you know, they're this far off the ground.
Yeah.
Like, so it was, you know, it was a pretty wild ride for a lot of them, but it was cool.
And Lucas, I think our ride height had to be 9.5 inches is what it was.
Really?
Yeah. And we would do like 9.75 or something. And then, cause at the mud at the end of the race, they'd tech you again. And you were, like, barely squeezing that 9.5 or whatever it was. It was crazy, man. But it's way different on your body inside the car because you're like, I don't know. It's was it more adrenaline for you or no?
For sure. I mean, it's just it's. You know, it's, I don't know if scary is the right word, but it's nerve wracking, you know, going into a corner with like 20 other cars around you and nobody's giving an inch, like nobody's going to bail out of it, you know? So like we're all going into this first corner and yeah, it was a little bit gnarly.
Did you get to go talk to any of your Can-Am teammates like Hunter Miller or Cody Miller and get some pointers?
Oh yeah. I was with those guys the whole time. And like, I tried to get pointers and they were super cool and they wanted to help and stuff like that. Cause they knew that they were going to smoke me. So like, they didn't care. They didn't care, you know, giving me some secrets and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I learned a lot from them too. And like, it was cool. So yeah, I appreciate it.
Were you able to pick up on any of like corner entry and corner exit and all that?
For sure. And you know what really helped is my friend Andrew Short was out there, moto guy. He lives out in Texas, and he actually came out because his son was racing one of the like the kid classes the following week. And he took a lot of videos of like the Millers and like the dudes that were up front, and then he took videos of me coming around, and he's like, "See, dude, you're like you're here, and you need to be here. These guys are out here on this corner, and you're here, and stuff like that." So that really helped a lot, and I feel like, you know, Shorty obviously is a supercross guy, like, but I feel like he, just through corner shape and things like that, he had such a better understanding of that, and showing me those videos and trying to kind of coach me through that helped a lot.
And you can learn as the track progresses, right? Like, so if it's rougher or smoother or wet or dry or whatever it is, it's kind of crazy, like... It brings me back to like my old short course days too, like understanding where the apexes are and where you can gain speed and stuff. Yeah. I think that's cool that you learn that stuff because I feel like that'll help you in Dakar and stuff too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's some sections like, again, like these rallies, they have a little bit of everything. So, I mean, there's definitely some like, you know, road sections where we're, you know, flipping it around some corners pretty good. And I think that, yeah, it can't help or it can't hurt. So
that kind of reminds me of you and I and our buddies going to the indoor kart tracks.
Yep.
And me trying to chase you down and learning lines and just focusing on, you know, I mean, you get your lap times, you're like, okay, well, I can do this different.
Yeah.
It was fun.
You know? We should do that, too. So, like, we'll schedule a side-by-side ride one of these days, but maybe we should schedule a K1 speed day, too.
Sick.
Dude, are you good?
That's another thing that I haven't done. Like, I've done it when I was a kid, but I've never, ever since I started actually racing as a job, I've never been.
Dude, we got to get you out there then.
So now that I know how to drive, that might be a little bit more fun. So we'll see.
Bring everybody up. We might not be able to bring like some of our old friends because our old friends, they got aggressive, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but.
Try to blow you out going to K1 speed.
Oh, man.
Man, I miss some of these Arizona times. Yeah, so like talking about the side-by-side racing and blowing up, and like to get back to what I was asking you, do you have ambitions to race in any other types of racing or any other classes?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think that the natural progression of things would be eventually being a T1 car. Mm-hmm. But honestly, right now I'm super happy with Can-Am. I've got a really good relationship with the factory and everybody over at Can-Am. So right now they're taking really good care of me. So I'm pretty happy where I'm at with them driving those cars. But, you know, maybe one day, you know, a couple years down the road or something like that, we can see if anything comes up. But
some of the guys, Toby Musico and like his son, and his dad, like, they want to come out and go to K1 speed, but they live in Australia, so they need a week's notice to get a flight.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be fun. Well, as we talk about this same thing, like, a T1 car is bitching, right? They're so fast, like, and the trash trucks are super cool, like, all these things. But when you look at the progression of side-by-sides, they're closing the gap, right? So, and now you have Can-Am coming out with a new car. They have the Polaris Pro R with a 4-cylinder. Who knows, man? Maybe just keep the relationship going and that gap will get close enough that you don't even need a T1 car, right? Like, you're already up at those speeds.
Well, yeah, and that's one thing. And then the other thing is like, with the Can-Ams and the T3 and the T4 class, I mean, if you look at the times from the last couple of Dakars, this is the most competitive classes, or the UTV classes, you know? So, like, I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit more in that way, like a driver's class, instead of just like who's got the most badass car and, you know, who can hold it together and the times be all so crazy and stuff like that. I mean, like, we're all, you know, we're all pretty consistently there at the end of the day. So I feel like it kind of boils down to the driver and their ability a little bit more, as well as the navigator. you know, like in rallying, the navigator is a huge part of it.
Yep.
So I think that that's pretty cool about it. Like, I'm super into that idea that, like, it's not just the car and you're not just blowing everybody's doors off because you've got a better car.
Yep.
I mean, like, we're all essentially in, you know, very similar cars, and it comes down to the driver and the navigator.
I feel like that's cool, though. Like, we never really had this opportunity in off-road that we do in the last 5 years, Joe. Like, everything is coming together and blowing up to be something, well, good for everybody.
For sure, for sure. And just like you mentioned earlier, the progression of the UTV industry, and in 2 years, who knows what they're going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
The way they've been progressing in the last 5 years is insane. So it's just, you know what I mean?
I always like the sequential gearbox of the Yamaha. I just hope that some of the other manufacturers throw in one of those bad boys, dude, because that'll definitely start cutting some of those gaps down, like against like some of the bigger cars and stuff. We kind of talked about this a little bit, but I'd like to understand how you keep you have such a busy schedule and you're getting pulled in a million different directions. And it's not just like you write everything down on a calendar and you have this set date. They could tell you you have to do something tomorrow and you have to adhere to it, right? Like, how do you keep such a mindset that you're focused on the task at hand to be able to achieve these things? Because we have a lot of kids or a lot of different racers that listen to this that have to go to school. They have to their job that they have to work at, right? And all of these different things to be able to achieve their goals. And I think having a mindset like yours would be very beneficial to them.
For sure. I mean, you just gotta compartmentalize, you know, your priorities. You gotta get done what you gotta get done first off, you know, first and foremost. And then you got to stay focused. I mean, it's super important to stay focused and make sure that you're doing the things that you need to do every day to be, you know, as successful as you can possibly be.
Right.
And if that means that, you know, tomorrow you have to fly to Tennessee to do a scramble event for Red Bull and go drive around the rocks, then, I mean, you do it.
Or even if you just have your homework that's due tomorrow, it's more important, right?
Same thing. Yeah, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. And, like, I think that everything that you do, like whether it be your homework or whether it be, you know, for the kids out there taking out the trash and stuff like that. Like, I don't know how to say this, but like nothing is for no reason. You know, like everything that you do makes you either, you know, better or stronger or somewhat more mentally switched on and stuff like that. So, I mean, you got to take everything for what it is and just, you know, do the damn thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that makes a lot of sense, too. And then you can't look, I guess you can look as far ahead as planning goals and stuff like that, but you can't look like you're getting disappointed, right? Like, just because you have to do your homework doesn't mean that you can't do the other things to make it like you have a winning program. Joe, you've seen it a bunch with the people that you work with. I mean, there's ups and downs all the time.
All the time. And like I say, you got to be able to keep focused on the task at hand and get your responsibilities done. And it just, like Austin stated, it just progresses and there's really no negatives to it.
Right.
Because you're learning, taking out the trash. You're learning each time you do it, you know what I mean? It's that you're doing it easier or it's better for you or
you know, it's
you're
funny.
Finding a different way to do it that's, you know, it's just
if you have that mindset and you're the kid, like I know, like when you were a kid and like Tyler and your guys' kids, like, you figure out a way to take the trash out faster,
for sure,
and more efficiently, so that you can get back to what you wanted to do.
Exactly.
And it's like you said, it's just progression. You know what I mean?
And so talking about all the family stuff and like how you do learn and we have all these people that are watching the show that and listening to the show in the future, you have a lot of support mechanisms around you. You have your fiance now, you have your family, you have your dad, you have all these people that support you with the team. All of that stuff is pretty important. How is it that, how do you deal with it? How do you negotiate all that stuff? Because there's a lot of people around you.
Yeah, no, that's super important. And that's been one of the biggest, I would say, helps to my schedule and my program and just my mindset in general is I know that, yeah, like my fiance obviously is like my number one supporter. Everything that I do, she's got my back. And if I tell her, you know, it sucks. It sucks having to leave for a month to go to Saudi Arabia every year and not spend New Year's at home for the last 4 years and stuff like that. So like, you know, she's been super cool and super helpful with everything and like my number one fan. So that helps. And, you know, I would say right up there, if not, you know, I think they fight for one and two, my mom, you know, like she's a big fan and she's super into it. So I feel like, you know, it helps a lot when you're out there and you're on a liaison back and you've just done a 500 kilometer stage and you've been in the car for 9 hours or something like that, and you're on your way back and it's raining and it's dark and you're in Saudi Arabia and Gustavo's taking a nap and I'm sitting here driving, and I'm like, you know, no matter what, like, no matter how tough this is right now, just, you got to stick through it and you got to get through it, because when you get home, you'll have all that, you know, all your support, your family, your
friends. Love, compassion.
Exactly. You know, like, it'll all be worth it. So, like, yeah, it sucks right now. Like, this isn't, or it doesn't suck, but this isn't ideal situation right now. Right. Like, you know, I'd rather be doing something else at the
for
moment.
Sure.
But if you can get through it and you can try as hard as you can, then it'll feel so much better when you get home and you don't have to do this every day. You know
and
what I mean?
That goes for full circle, Joe, because you've traveled a lot as well. So yeah. You understand this. Like, when it comes back, that means that when you do spend the time with your loved ones or whoever it is that supports you, your team, your friends, that you're dedicated to them and you're like giving back to all
and,
them.
And it's so much more valuable. It's amazing. Yeah. You come home from a trip, man, and it's the love and support that they have, you know what I mean, and show you is just,
it's
unbelievable.
That's a huge part of, like, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a huge part of my, you know, my mindset and like what helps me be motivated. And I think it helps my performance a lot too, is that, like, I just think, like, you know, like, never really get down, because if you get down, then whatever. But like, all you got to do is get through these 14, 15, you know, days, and you got to try as hard as you possibly can, because then you're done, and then you get to go home, and then you get to, you know, be around the people that you love, and, you know what I mean, and be stoked that you're home and stuff like that. So stick it out, try your best, and then when you get home, you'll feel really good, and you'll be able to enjoy being home and feel like you didn't leave anything on the table when you're out there.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And then you're also giving back to them too, because as much as you're focused on the task at hand, or you're focused on preparing for the next event or whatever it is, you have to also understand that you're taking away from your loved ones as well. So they're still supporting you during that time. So when you get back, if you give them, you know, all of that energy that you didn't before, it means a lot to them too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it's, and it provides for, you know, the love and support that they show to you makes it easier for you to go to the next event.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And it just keeps on recycling itself. You know what I mean? So it's pretty slick.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. All right. So we're going to kind of start like winding the interview down a little bit here. But like, what kind of advice, or like, what is the main things that you think are part of your success that you can express to some of the younger kids, or maybe somebody that hasn't even raced that wants to go race?
Kind of stuff that we've been talking about. Like, I mean, you know, your mental, your mindset is like the number one thing. Like, you got to have a good mindset. Two, you got to be dedicated enough to go out there, and you got to train, and you got to practice, and you got to learn the things that make you a good racer, whether it be, you know, out there driving, and whether it be mechanics. You need to learn that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Three, just be focused. You know, like, once you lose focus, as fast as we're going and as hard as it is to read terrain and, you know, the things that we're doing, if you lose focus, then you're done.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're going to start knocking off tires. You're going to get lost. You're going to crash probably most of the time. You're going to crash, and it's going to suck. So, like, you got to stay focused. You got to be able to, you know, like, yeah, keep focused. And then just have good people around you, and try your hardest, and, you know, don't be a dick.
Yeah, exactly. Don't be a dick. Exactly.
Yeah, like, realistically.
And I agree with that 100%. I think the mental thing is just always be happy, man, because, like, you're out there doing something that you love. Whether it's racing a 170 or racing at a trophy truck or in Dakar, like, all of this started because of your and all of our love for off-road. So you're still getting to go out and play in the dirt. So make sure that you understand that. And all the people that support you, they're out there helping you, not anything else. So, all right, we're going to do some rapid-fire Q&A stuff. But before we do that, let's give a shout out to some of the people that do help you, like you were talking about.
Yeah, big shout out to Red Bull. Obviously, you know, these guys have been amazing throughout the last couple of months that we've been working together, and really looking forward for a long and nice relationship with them. Can-Am, obviously, you know, I've been getting really good care taken to me by Can-Am for the last couple of years, and that's by far the best side-by-side you can possibly get. And when that new car comes out, dude, it's going
to
be sick.
I can't wait to see what they do.
Yeah, it's going to be sick. So, shout-out to everyone over at Can-Am. Shout-out to everyone over at Red Bull. Motul, Those guys, they've been sponsoring the team for a while. Best oils in the game.
Yep.
KMC Wheels just went over and picked up some freshies the other day. Everyone over there was super chill.
Did you get to play with any of the RC cars in the office?
I didn't play with any of them, but like I walked through all the office and I saw everything that they got going on there. Dude, it's wild some of the stuff that they're doing over there.
It's cool though, right? And you can see all the posters. One of these days we got to get your poster on the wall.
I know. I need to send them one over. BFG tires, we switched to them this year and it's been crazy. I mean, 14 days through the gnarliest rocks ever, you know, basically in the world. And I got two flats, and I pretty much deserve both of them. So, so big shout out to them. And, yeah, I mean, everybody that sponsors me and the team, it's a big shout out to South Racing, all the mechanics. Yep. I mean, I always say it and I'll say it again. I'm just the guy that holds the wheel and pushes the pedals, you know, without the whole team of mechanics and everybody that goes into it. We wouldn't even be here.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be able to do anything. So like big shout out to all the mechanics, the team owner, Scott Abraham, Gustavo, obviously. Gustavo has probably changed my driving more than really anybody ever, like mindset wise, how chill he is. I really learned a lot from him, and then just driving in general and mindset. Gustavo's, you know, been a huge force in, you know, getting eighth in Dakar to getting first at Dakar. So big shout out to Gustavo for everything that he does and really just everybody that helps out. I appreciate it a lot, and don't think that I don't, because I really do.
Yeah, and like you said before, too, like your family and everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they already got some time.
So. Yeah, they got some time.
That was that. So, yeah, obviously family.
What's up, Rossi? How are you? Yeah, she's proud of you, too, for all your achievements and being so humble. That's one of the things that I think is so cool. Actually, do you have any more questions for AJ?
He mentioned something earlier. When you're, like, say, out in these vast lands like Dakar and some of that stuff, you're
basically out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And you're not wheel to wheel with somebody.
Yep.
You're out there by yourself. You don't see anybody for hours. How do you and Gustavo keep focused? And
that's so hard, because like when you're out there, that's when everybody starts losing time. It's like when you don't have anybody to chase after, you can't see that you're getting closer to anybody, and you can't see you're getting further away from anybody.
Correct. And so does that start playing mind games with you?
Yeah. Like we call it falling asleep. You start falling asleep a little bit, and then you just get slower and slower and slower, and then you'll get back. And these guys that were basically together all day, they have so much better times than everybody that was by themselves.
Because they were chasing themselves.
Yeah. And like really just the best way to combat that is, you know, be aware of that. Be aware of what I just said. Like you're going to go slower and you're going to start to lose focus and just like go to sleep and kind of like lay off a little bit. So I would say the best way to, you know, fix that is have that in your head. Like I'm not around anybody. I've been not around anybody for 3 hours. I'm probably, you know, taking a lot off right now than what I could do. So you got to also think about that at the same time. It's like, all right, I should probably step it up because there's probably a lot more on the table right now.
Yeah. And so do you try to push or do you start pushing automatically and not even know it, trying to look for that dust?
Kind of. Yeah. So that's the other thing is like if I could get up to this guy, and that goes into the strategy of knowing who's in front of you, what time they started and how far away approximately they are ahead of you and stuff
like
that. So you're like, dude, if I can catch this guy, in this number, you know, 305 or something like that, if I catch that guy started 6 minutes ahead of me, well, then I know I'm pretty solid, you know? And especially if that guy's good and, like, leading or, you know, in the top three or something like that, then you're like, all right, like, you know, we're doing good today.
That's kind of crazy, though, because you always have a carrot to chase, right? Like, there was a lot of times in the endurance, like, athletic stuff that we were doing, like the Ironman or the long-distance bicycle races, where you'd be out for, like, 30 miles on your own.
Yeah.
Like have nothing. And the only thing you could gauge was off your heart rate, your cadence of how fast you were pedaling, and then potentially your speed. But your speed didn't matter that much because you didn't know how fast everybody else was going. You just knew how much your motor was pumping to be able to go. So you didn't just like, that's so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so hard to do it. Cause like a couple of times I've been caught out and like you get back to the bivouac, you look at the times and you're like, oh wow, I got smoked today. You know, like just because you were by yourself all day, you had no idea. Like you thought that you were going at a good pace, but then you get back and you're like, man, I fell asleep. Like I was by myself all day. I totally fell off.
That's wild to think, right? What would be the move then, Joe, like as a co-driver?
I don't know. It's just try to capitalize on that there is no dust to work with. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you don't, you know, like you said, you end up falling asleep and slowing down. without even knowing it.
Yeah, you know even I mean? If you think you're going fast, you may not. Yeah, correct, dude, that's correct. Wild like, to think about. Dude, that is so crazy. Are there any other things that you wanted to ask AJ before we get into the rapid fire?
No, that was kind of really the only thing I could think of.
That was a crazy question. Okay, how about this? What question would Tyler ask AJ if he was sitting here?
Tyler. Oh, T-Bone. He would probably just want to know, how does it feel when you get that
trophy?
That top dog right there.
Dude, I mean, that's the goal. That makes it all worth it. That makes all the blood, sweat, tears, times, you know, dirt in the mouth, like everything.
Is it emotional?
Oh, yeah. Honestly, it is. Like, I don't know, because, like, my first Dakar win, my second Dakar win, obviously both emotional, but I don't know. Like, I almost felt like the second year, just with some of the stuff that kind of went on before the race, it almost felt a little bit better. Like, it felt crazy, you know, so.
Dude, I'll tell you what, sitting here in Arizona, watching you live on the computer, when you're over there, dude, I'm like a wreck.
Yeah,
I'm freaking fired up. You know what I mean? I'm pissed off because this and that. Yep. And I'm just watching the freaking laptop.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So it's got to be emotional. It's got to be huge.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's a lot. And, you know, it's hard not to, like, when you're standing up there and they hand you, you know, the trophy and you're sitting there and the fireworks going off and the dude hands you the trophy and you're, like, holding it and you're like, dude, like, we did it, you know? Like, yeah. This is crazy.
How long does it take to set in?
That's a funny thing too, is it takes a while because like everyone is so happy and everyone's like, yeah, congrats, congrats, congrats. And like, I'm like, yeah, thanks. But you know, I had just been fully focused, switched on, insane person for the last 15, 14 days, you know?
Yeah. So, like your brain's not there yet.
No. Yeah. Like I'm ready to go do another day tomorrow. Like I'm thinking about, I need to go to sleep and I need to get as much sleep as possible and try to eat as much as possible for the next day. And
yeah.
And then it hits you like kind of when like, usually like a few days after you get home, if not on the airplane on the way there, it's like, oh, okay, like we're done. Like I'm off work. I just punched out. Like, and then not only that, but you know, we did it. We achieved the goal. Like the ultimate goal obviously is to win, you know? And so when you get that, it's like, dude,
that's a great question, better. Joe. Cause like Austin's so humble about it. Like I can just see him, like he gets a text from his fiance or his mom or his dad or whoever, like when he's on his way back and he's like, oh wow, this is pretty meaningful. Now I get to, like, when I step off the plane, I get to share it with the people I love.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, and I'm so stoked about that, you know?
Yeah, dude, that's so crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it's a trip.
And you know, just the same thing with Gustavo. He's been switched on for 14, 15, 16 days.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to turn that thing off. You know what I mean? A couple, 2-3 days later, now you're like, wow.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yes. Is there a first thing that you want to do? Like, you know, when they say, oh, you won the Super Bowl, now are you going to Disneyland? Like, is there something that you're like, all right, when I get back home, I'm going to Cali Tacos in Glendale or whatever. Like, what's your move?
Yeah, so, like, that's funny you say that because we eat such different things over there and stuff like that. So the first thing I always want to do is I want to go over here to Federico's just because it's close and it's got a drive-thru and I want to get the biggest burrito I possibly can.
Dude, what's your choice?
Okay, so they don't have like a proper California burrito over here, which is kind of a bummer, but they have an Arizona burrito, which is pretty good. It's about the same, realistically.
There you go.
So yeah, I always cop a burrito, and then honestly, I just want to hang out at home for a little bit, like go to dinner, ride my beach cruiser around, and, you know. That's about it. Hang out.
That's the life, man. I could get along with that pretty easily.
Dude. Yeah, it's not so bad.
Mexican food and beach cruisers? Joe, I think we need to hang out with Austin more often.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's too bad.
All right. Well, yeah, so first and foremost, thanks for, you know, having us at the shop and taking the time. I know your schedule is stacked. I'm going to do the rapid fire a little different. Joe's done it before, but I'm going to ask you the question first, and then we're going to give it to Joe right after, too. So,
cool.
All right, rapid fire Q&A with Austin Jones and Joe Wining.
Let's do it.
Tacos or hot dogs?
Tacos.
Joe, tacos or hot dogs?
Tacos, for sure.
This one's really funny. So this came from one of Jeremy McGrath's mechanics. How do you spell silk?
S-I-L-K.
What does a cow drink?
Milk.
Joe, how do you spell silk?
S-I-L-K.
What does a cow drink?
Couldn't tell you.
Water.
I guess, yeah.
Water.
See, you can throw that on somebody else. Like, see if you can throw it on your fiance tonight and see if she knows about it.
As soon as I said that, I'm like, damn, do cows drink milk? Probably not.
Yeah. That's a good one, though, right? Yeah, he told me, and I was like, damn it, I messed it up, too. Like, I totally got it wrong, too.
Well, I had a buffer because he screwed it up. I'm like, wait a second.
chicken or asada?
Asada.
Joe?
Asada.
Asada. Dunes or the river?
Dunes for me.
Yeah, dunes. You see, I have never spent much time at the river, so I really don't know.
Not a big river guy.
No.
Action shots or still shots?
I like action shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I prefer action.
Let's see. Oh, three wheeler or quad?
Three wheelers.
Dude, big death machine guy.
Three wheelers.
What kind of three wheelers are you going with then?
Those old Hondas, right? I mean,
which one? Like the 200X or like the little ATC ones?
Man, I mean, the little ATC ones seem a little bit more my style, to be honest.
Campfire racing?
Yeah, exactly.
Pizza rolls or jalapeno poppers?
Ooh, that's a tough one, dude. I think jalapeno poppers.
Did I ever do these questions with you or no?
I don't know if I've gotten these exact ones, but I've
I've
done a session or two with you before, but these are a little bit different.
Okay, I think we updated them because somebody gave me some new ones. So, all right, if I do one, sorry again, but
I'd have to say the pizza rolls.
Big pizza roll. Are you dipping it in like ranch or what are you dipping it in?
Yeah, ranch. The jalapeno depends on the jalapeno.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It's pretty spicy.
Coffee or tea?
Big coffee guy.
What, Joe, I'd say Coke or Pepsi.
Definitely Coke.
Coke.
Did you know that about Joe?
Oh, yes. I've witnessed this. Yeah.
Coke and sunflower seeds all day. You still do sunflower seeds all the time?
Not as much. Like if I'm on a long road trip.
Maybe.
Yeah, it just gives me something to do while I'm driving, you know?
Exactly.
All right, I don't remember what your answer was if we already asked you this, but what's your favorite movie, Austin?
I like Superbad, dude. I'm a big Superbad guy. Like,
really?
Just for some reason, that one always gets me.
Are you throwing lines, Superbad lines out there when you're with your homies?
A lot of the time, yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Joe?
You know, I'd have to say probably Wedding Crashers.
Wedding Crashers is a good one.
Reminds me of an old friend I used to have. His name was John Birat.
Yeah.
And him and I just used to do some dumb shit. And it was so much fun. just part of growing up. It was fun, you know?
Like Wedding Crashers?
Yeah.
I forgot what they were doing in the hiking sequence. Like, blue 42, blue 42. Then he just gets cleaned out.
Yeah.
Instagram or Facebook?
Instagram.
Big Instagram guy. How about you, Joe? We know you have a social media expert. I think she was watching earlier, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she was. You know, Instagram.
Big Instagram guy?
Yeah.
Do the kids know about Instagram?
Yeah, they have their accounts, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah.
If you could have any superpower, Austin, what would it be?
I don't know. Probably to fly. I think that would be so sick.
Yeah, that would be super cool.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe?
To not stress.
That's your superpower? Just to chill out?
To chill out and relax.
I feel you guys. So everybody said, like a lot of people, like a lot of racers pick flying, but I always pick, you know, have you seen that movie Jumper where he like can teleport or whatever? He like just pops up. Like that's my jam.
That would be rad.
I'm thinking about the jumper thing because then like I could just go eat like, I don't know, some Italian food in Italy.
Yeah.
And I could just come back and just chill in Phoenix.
Bounce back. Yeah.
Netflix or YouTube?
Netflix.
Joe?
I think I'd have to go with YouTube.
Yeah, I'm kind of a big YouTube guy lately, too. Actually, like that actually brings up a good point. I'd like to ask your guys' opinion because we're going to talk about some of the media stuff. I have to do a podcast with Mad Media on Thursday, and we're going to talk about some of the media stuff. And I think it's really cool that we now have opportunities to be able to share a lot of the off-road stuff that we do now by putting Starlinks on trucks and getting the in-cars and stuff. What do you guys feel like about that stuff?
I mean, I think that any type of broadcasting and any type of footage and stuff that we can get out there to people that aren't necessarily as into it as we are, I think how could it hurt, you know?
Very much like the F1 thing on Netflix. I feel like that, like I'm addicted to it, honestly.
Yeah.
The more the merrier. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, and just last year here at the finish of the Baja 1000, there was an incident. There was a cruise ship that had came in and, a husband and wife from Canada had came up and started talking to me, and they had no clue what we were doing, what these cars are, what.
Yeah, they just came to see the beach in Mexico.
Exactly. And we talked for like a half hour, and they were stoked.
Yeah.
Really?
They were just like, oh, my God, we're going to go look at this on YouTube. And they were just – the more we can bring it into the world population, it's just better.
That's exactly what, like, I'm not saying I'm the guy, but that's exactly what my heart and my goals have been. Like, just with this little show, Dirt Life, and, like, all of these different things that we're trying to do with media, is to be able to walk into Walmart in, like, let's say 3 to 5 years and just be like, hey, did you guys see the Baja 1000? Did you guys see the car? And they're like, oh, I missed it. Instead of, what are you talking about, bro?
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I would love to be able to just walk in there and, like, have it be like that. I mean, like, that would be so cool to see you one day, like, doing that same thing, right? Like, at Home Depot, just, like, supporting your sponsors and showcasing what off-road is in front of a Home Depot. I think that would be so rad.
Oh, yeah. It would be sick, yeah.
All right, so let's see here. Videos or photos?
Videos.
Videos.
Big video guy. Most memorable race?
Most memorable race for me.
And it doesn't even have to be like a winning race. It could be one that you were just like zoned in or whatever.
Honestly, like probably one of my favorite racing memories, other than like Dakar wins and stuff like that, because that kind of trumps everything. But I won the 2019 San Felipe 250 with my dad riding with me.
Oh, that's cool.
It was pretty rad. That was a good one.
Was it a stressful one, or was it like just...
Have you ever met my dad? Yeah, dude, it was the most stressful race ever. But no, it was cool. A little bit stressful. It was a big battle, honestly, and yeah, we got it done.
Who were you battling with that race?
It was Sarah Price.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah was, dude, she was ripping that year. Yeah,
were you guys just like back and forth the whole time or what?
She was behind me the whole time, but like I was getting splits and stuff that she was like on her way. So I remember I had to keep on like pushing and stuff like that. So that's probably like my most memorable one with him riding with me.
It's kind of crazy how things get like, how they progress, because now she's your Can-Am teammate. Like, yeah, isn't right? it wild?
Yeah, it's a trip.
Dude, it's nuts. Do you have, how about this, Joe? Do you have a most memorable race with the Jones family?
With his father, yes. Jesse Jones and myself, we worked together for 11 years racing. There was a bunch of good races from them, you know, but together, I would have to say it was a Baja 1000. Gosh, I don't remember what year. I'm going to say 17. I mean, you were in a spec truck. With the Thunderstruck, with Bryce Wayne?
Yeah, 18 gentleman. Then.
18?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And
so that was like when you were really beginning.
Yeah, and he was back and forth with a gentleman by the name of Elias Hanna, mm-hmm. and they're battling all night long, and finally...
And he knows Baja, too.
Correct. So. And Austin got in, and they were still there in probably 300 miles before the finish. Austin was able to stretch a big old lead. And it was cool. You know what I mean?
Was just like you were just like, dude, I'm dropping the hammer.
I'm going for it. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
I had no idea what was going on. I'm like, I'm just going to listen to Duncan. Jason Duncan was riding with me.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm going to listen to Duncan.
That's a good guy to listen to.
Yeah, I would say.
And it was cool because his dad and all of us were at the finish when AJ came around the corner. And it's just, dude, it's a big feat just to finish.
Yeah, only does a race. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he was able to do it. True fashion. It was good.
That's cool, man. How did you feel after that? Were you smoked?
Oh, yeah. I remember I was super smoked that race, and yeah, it was just hard, man. Like, obviously, you feel good, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a big feeling of accomplishment, but yeah, I was toasted after that.
Is that like one of those where you get done with it and you're just like, yeah, dude, I need a freaking burrito?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Dude, that's crazy. I love the memories. Like, I'm sure, like, we should, like, one of these days is like, maybe if your dad wants to do one too, and just like have like go like a walk down memory lane, because that would be super cool. Like one time we did story times with the Rob, so Rob from Warfighter Made and Rob McCachran, dude, it was so rad. Like the stories that he has, like, and I'm sure you guys have the same stories with your dad and with Joe, and like, I mean, even just growing up, like, and man, those stories are just they. Like, I love that.
Yeah, no, it's a huge part of it.
Let's see here. Oh, this is a good one, actually. What's your favorite snack, but in the race car?
Peanuts.
All day?
All day. I'm a big
like peanut. A specific one? Like hot peanuts? Like just regular?
I like during in the race car, just regular, you know, Salt Boys or something like that. But like outside, Hot Boys.
Yeah, there you go. Joe, what are you doing in the race car?
90%. And the only time I ever do it is Snickers bars.
In the race car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got, you know, chocolate and sugar and salt, you know, and peanuts, and it's kind of got a variety of everything and just keeps you going.
All right. So what's the favorite snack actually just like after you got, because you're probably not trying to eat peanuts after you're done with the race.
No, I'm trying to get whatever I can get my hands on after the race. Yeah.
Like for some reason, whenever I exercise like that, I'm always like chicken or meat, like after the race. I'm like, give me something good.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say that though, too. The main reason I ask these questions about this is like, so I think 2 years ago, we were doing all the pits and video and stuff for Craig Scanlon and his team, and we went to a pit, like it was down kind of in the south, like by Loretto or something. Like it was way down there. And it was like right at the end, like the last stint that they had to finish the 1,000. And the only thing that we had left, because all the crew guys ate all the hamburgers and stuff, was a granola bar. And I went to go give him a granola bar, and he slaps it out of my hand. He goes, fuck you, give me some meat.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, now I get it, because he's so hungry because he's lost all of his potassium and all his protein and stuff. Like,
yeah.
And then so somebody finally found him a hamburger, and it was like, dude, if we gave him peanuts, no way.
Yeah.
Like, he's was all about it. That's so crazy that everybody has such a different mindset on it. Supercross or motocross?
Supercross for me.
I like the outdoors.
Yeah, big outdoor guy. Let's see here. What other form of racing would you like to try, AJ?
I've never done anything on asphalt before, so I would like to at least try that in some cool cars. That would be really cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah, so I would really like to try anything on the asphalt.
How precise do you think you could get your driving skills? Because asphalt is completely different type of racing.
Yeah, it would be way different. But honestly, I mean, it definitely would need a couple of years, you know, a couple of years of practice. But, yeah, I mean, I think that when it comes down to it, it'd be really fun to try at least.
Yeah, I think the level of patience is different too.
Yeah.
Like with that stuff. Have you ever done any like helping support or done any asphalt racing yourself, Joe? Cause
I've done a little bit, and it's pretty intense. Yeah. You know what I mean? The thing I would like to be more involved in is drifting.
Yeah.
Those guys are pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly how fast those guys get.
Where they're putting the cars and at the speeds that they're traveling. You know what I mean? That's pretty neat.
Yeah, and they're driving with the rear of the car, so it's like even worse, right?
Yeah.
It's like those people that can ride their bicycles backwards sitting on the handlebars. Like, it's wild, right?
Guess, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder, like, would you rather do, like, I don't know what you want to call it, like SCCA or, like, IndyCar or, like, actual drift stuff? Because there's a massive difference.
I think IndyCars would be, like, that would be it.
That would be pretty sick.
That would be sick, yeah.
Have you seen that? I forgot what they call it. I think it's called Formula E or something. Those like prototype cars that are battery powered.
Yeah, the electric cars.
Those are sweet.
Yeah, those are rad.
Those things. I just don't know how it would be like to not hear a motor.
Yeah, they sound weird. Like they've got that. It sounds like a Tesla. You know.
Yeah, like all of us off road guys like drive with the seat of our pants and the sound, right? Like so. Yeah. Like I wonder how it would be to be like do it different. Do you use earplugs or no?
No. Yeah. But in my helmet, I've got like literally like a pair of these.
Oh, okay. So it's like nice and quiet.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Oh, speedboat or dragster?
Dragster.
How about you, Joe?
Dragster.
Dragster? Yeah, we just did all that stuff with John Force the other day, or John Force's team the other day. That was really cool to see, man. I don't know. Like, I looked at the inside the cockpit of one of those things. I don't think I could fit in some of those. Dude, they're so tiny. Like, and they have all this like sheet metal protection. Like, you just like have this little window.
Yeah, that's scary.
And they go a million miles an hour and like so fast. All right, so the last question of the night, chips and guacamole or French fries and ketchup?
Chips and guac for me.
I'll take the fries and ketchup.
You're going to take fries and ketchup?
Yeah, I don't
think. Yesenia's not going to be happy with you, dude.
Yeah, she knows I'm not down for the guacamole.
What about the kids? What would they take?
Guacamole, for sure.
Really?
How about the fiance? What's she taking?
I don't know.
Dude, that's what we should do. So we'll have story time with the Jones, and then we'll also do that. Like, remember, did you ever see those dating shows where you see how much they know about each other?
That's the question.
Before you guys get married?
Oh, that'd be great.
all right, cool, man. And then you already gave a shout-out to all your sponsors, so I appreciate it, man. If you don't got anything left, Joe?
No, I say thanks for having us, man.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah, thank you guys for coming down.
Thanks for showing us the workshop here. That's pretty neat. You guys got some really cool things in the works. That's neat.
Yeah, it is. And I like the progression, man. Like I said, we're addicted to progress, and I really like where you're going with everything that you're doing, because you're not just focusing on your racing. You're focusing on helping off-road, growing these vehicles, helping other people. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that's part of your mindset and the things that you're living, and I'd love to see that, man. So it's cool. All right, so if you guys want to follow Austin Jones, it's AJ Jones 79.
AJ Jones period 79.
Okay.
But it might just pop up.
So. On Instagram. And you can also look at the Dirt Life. We posted some stuff with him as well, and just go following him. You can follow Joe with the JTech site.
Yep.
The JTech Instagram. Do you know what it is?
JTech Motorsports.
JTech Motorsports on Instagram. Check it all out. He can help you if you need any services for your side-by-side as well, too. Thank you guys very much for joining the show. We really appreciate you guys taking the time out of your Monday nights. You can always go check out the sponsor deals page on thedirtlifeshow.com. You can get some sponsorship advice. You can get deals on all of from all of our sponsors, like the guys over at Motul, Shock Therapy, Max's Tires, KMC Wheels, JL Audio, Evolution Power Sports, Zollinger Racing Products, Vision Canopies, and Cryo Heat. Man, it was just cool to hang out, Austin. We wish you all the luck in the future and can't wait to see you on the podium again, dude.
Thank you. Thank you guys for coming out. Thanks for having me on. I had a good time.
Yeah.
Do it again.
That was good. So, what's next on the agenda for racing?
Sonora. So round three of the World Championship, the Rally Championship, is coming up.
Sweet. How do you feel about that being in our pretty much in our own backyard?
I feel good about it.
Hell yeah. This is your hometown right here.
Yeah, that's cool. I feel like I'm one of the only people that has ever actually, you know, been down there before. One of the only car guys. I know a lot of bike guys are racing that have raced it before, but I feel like I'm one of the only car guys that's actually, you know, spent some time down there and stuff like that.
And this is a 5-day event, or
yeah, this one will be five, and I think there's a prologue day, so six, but prologue will only be, you know, a couple kilometers. Uh-huh. So,
you know, who's racing that with you or like against you?
I would assume honestly the same people that are you know, in the World Championship, all my teammates, and then yeah, I mean, you know, the regular players. It's a full FIA Championship event, so everyone will be there.
That'll be cool for America to be able to go down there and see too.
For sure. Yeah. And this is the first year for the FIA to do this here in the Sonora Rally.
Yeah, so they've had the Sonora Rally for a couple of years, but it was never part of the World Championship calendar. And then this year, I think that they wanted to make it like a proper World Championship, so they added a race in North America. And yeah, the Sonora was perfect for it.
Yeah,
so
that's cool. That's going to bring all the big guys over, and the Europeans and.
Exactly, and it's a trip because most people are flying here into Phoenix. Like,
yeah.
It's so weird that like all these people that I see only in Saudi Arabia or Europe or, you know, Dubai or something like that, they're all going to be in Phoenix, Arizona. So like people are hitting
your backyard,
up. Yeah. People are hitting me up like crazy, asking me stuff, and I'm like, dude, like just come on over.
Austin, you got a room for rent?
Yeah, exactly, right.
Dude, that's pretty cool. Maybe you should show them the best burrito shops then, huh?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, we'll have some fun. But yeah, the race will be super cool, and hopefully we can get a good result and get some good points for the championship.
Nice. I think it would be cool. So I'm gonna look at that. Do you know when it is? Because I want to look at that and see if the Dirt Life can go down there. Maybe.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to go check it out.
The first day is either the 22nd or 23rd. I gotta look at the proper schedule.
But it's coming up pretty quick.
Yep. Yep. So
right on.
Next Sunday, I think, is the first day.
How do the cars get here?
Dude, they fly them. Like, okay, so a lot of the time, you put them on a boat, and then, like, the organization will ship them over. But if, for some reason, you don't make the boat or something like that, then they fly them.
You miss the boat.
Yeah, exactly. You miss the boat. But, like, they'll put them on, like, underneath, like, 747s and stuff like that.
Really?
In the belly of them, yeah.
Dude, that's wild.
Do they ship them assembled, or do they have to assemble...
Yeah, they ship them assembled. I mean, they can't fly them with batteries in them, and they can't fly them with fuel in them.
Of course,
yeah, safety hazards and stuff. But
are they like rolled in, or are they in a box?
I think they'll crate them. Yeah,
dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, so that's gonna be wild because like you were saying, like the Toyotas and stuff like that, like Nasser's car is gonna be in the belly of a 747.
Well, I just think like the trash trucks are massive.
Oh yeah, and that too. I mean, those guys might have to hit the boat.
Yeah, I was gonna say
that'd be
if they don't make it, they just don't make it.
That'd be a big airplane.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. All right, well, I appreciate everything that you guys are doing for the off road community, and wish you the best in the future, dude.
Oh, thank you, man.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right, thank you guys very much for watching. We will see you guys next time. Good night.